Revenue Chat episode 168.
This is Revenue Chat Radio with your host, Tony D'Urso, interviewing successful entrepreneurs and giving you actionable advice and insights. Let's rev it up.
Welcome to Revenue Chat. I'm your host, Tony D'Urso. Some quick news here. With over 2 million downloads on my weekly talk shows, our audience is loving our guest interviews, and I just want to say thanks a million. Or actually, thanks 2 million. And I am now on television with the Tony D'Urso TV show. Check it out at TonyDURSO.com/TonyTV. Also, if you want to get major shout-outs for your business, or get interviewed, just go to TonyDURSO.com/TonyTV and check out the links. Also, stick around to the very end for a little story on something I really love. I wonder what that could be. All right, Revenue Crew, let's rev it up. Here we go. Today we set the stage for Revenue Chat with Jack Yost, and we're going to talk about leadership and followership with completed staff work. Here's some facts about Jack. He's the author of The Memo, How the Classified Military Document That Helped the U.S. Win World War II Can Teach You How to Succeed in Business. He's a clinical assistant professor of management at the Catholic University of America. He's a senior business mentor in high technology, medicine, nonprofit, and new media consulting. He's published by multiple publications such as National Review Online, The Business Monthly, The Women's Quarterly, and other outlets. He's served as a columnist for Small Business Trends and The Stream. And the list goes on. Really, it's very long. That's a great list of accomplishments, Jack. Welcome to Revenue Chat.
Oh, thank you, Tony. It's an honor and a delight to be here.
And the honor is really, really mine. You've done so much, and I can't wait to find out about the memo. But first, I'd like to know, Jack, how did you become so good at business and management? How did it all start for you?
Well, it may have been, my motivation might be that I was probably not as good as I would have liked to have been, or maybe not as good as I thought I was. And so I wanted to do a study of management, of how we get things done through the active support of other people. But in learning how to do that, I wanted to do a literature review on how, in throughout history, managers and got things done. And Tony, one of the things I found out from the great business management guru, Peter Drucker, was that management, he said, won World War II. Peter Drucker said that it wasn't the force of arms or superior firepower or armaments or strategy that won World War II. Peter Drucker said that management was the key factor that helped us win the Second World War. So as I was learning how to be a manager and learning how to manage, I started to study how did we do this? What made us so different in the world and even today on management? And what I found is it was a little-known document. In fact, it was classified during the Second World War. It was lightly classified. And it was called The Doctrine of Completed Staff Work. And it was a short memo. It was an undated memo put out by the MacArthur team, General Douglas MacArthur. And it simply said, as a military doctrine, that whenever the boss got a document, that it would be well completed, that there would be nothing left to add, so that all the boss had to do was to make a decision. And this was revolutionary to me in learning how management was done or is done, and how we got things done during the war, in that the boss wasn't the font of all knowledge. The boss didn't do all the thinking, heaven forbid, but that he had staff around him that could develop ideas, research the landscape, come up with options, and then make a recommendation. Because as you know so well, Tony, the only thing that the boss should do is make a decision. So I came about it in a long roundabout way as a practical exercise in how I could learn to manage and get things done, but also to as an academic study, how I could figure out how management was done during the Second World War and to teach today's managers and future managers how to do it.
That is really interesting, Jack. And for the Revenue Crew audience, I'll give you a little overlay on this. I've looked into this a little bit, very intrigued by this, quote, completed staff work, unquote. And I've read through the memo, which you can find if you search around on Yoast.com, Y-O-E-S-T, Yoast.com. And I found that, you know, I've worked in corporate America for a long time. I'm sure many of you in the audience have, or you've worked for someone, or someone's worked for you. And you get these, hey, why don't we do this, dot, 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 or how come we're not doing that, dot, dot, or we should be doing this instead. And you get all these things sometimes to do that from people under you that seem to be like the best way. And what Jack is describing here is the completed staff work where, well, you know, dear junior member, if you think this is so great, research it, find it, put it all together, and then submit it as something complete that we can just take off and run. Is that right, Jack, so far?
Exactly. That's the perfect summary of it, because one of the great challenges is that in an organization, we have, you know, a lot of good ideas, and staff, we want them to have good ideas. But, you know, we need, you know, what I think Thomas Edison said, we need 99% of perspiration and 1% inspiration. So good ideas, yes, bring me the good ideas, but make sure that they're vetted, that they're completed, that it's a finished product, and then the boss can make the decision whether to do it or not. But that's the great challenge that every boss wishes that he had, was more good ideas from which to choose, more good ideas that are already vetted out, already completed, already researched, so that all he has to do is assign his name or assign a budget and allocate some resources, and then appoint somebody to execute somebody else's idea. And as you know how management works, the boss will take the credit. He'll give credit down to everybody else. But then the boss will be, as he should be perceived, as an expert manager because he got things done. But you're right. It's not enough just to have a good idea. You've got to have a way to get that good idea done.
And what's interesting is this technique, this piece of technology, management technology, let's call it, this actually helped win a war. Please tell me more about this.
Well, yeah, no, you're right. It's so simple, and as I describe it, it's nothing. I wish I could claim it as something new, but it's not. It's a military doctrine, and what they were finding is General MacArthur, during the Second World War, early on in the war, he was finding out that the bosses, his decision makers, his senior leaders, were getting a lot of ideas from staff, getting some good input, getting some good thoughts. But what was happening is that the bosses were having to do too much work. So General MacArthur saw that his senior leadership was working way too hard. And that is the biggest challenge that I see with my clients, and I know you see, and I hear with your guests, that bosses, the managers, are always the hardest working people in the organization, but they're working on the wrong stuff. They're always working, and they are too busy making too many little decisions. And as Ronald Reagan once said, a manager that makes too many decisions is not a good manager. The best managers only make big decisions. So what General MacArthur saw is that his senior leadership was making too many of the little decisions, working way too hard, and exhausting that most valuable of capital, human capital, and not getting things done. So through this new doctrine that he instituted and made a doctrine of near religious faith of that the bosses would be put in the position that they're supposed to be, and that is to decide on a course of action and then to decide which projects to endorse. But they don't have to come up with the ideas, and they don't have to put the project together. They have junior staff that they can delegate that work down so that ideas can come from the staff. And we call it today, empowerment, but that's what it is.
Now, we understand the word leadership, and we kind of get it. And this is an interesting concept, you know, piece of little management technology here. Followership. How does this help in followership? In other words, the people that are under your care in the corporation or you're responsible for, how does this help them and make them grow, for that matter, make them even more loyal to the organization?
Oh, yeah, no, exactly. It's almost counterintuitive that if I empower the staff, if I give too much, if I delegate too much down to the staff, well, will they start doing things that I don't want done? Will they run off on their own direction? And some of that is a challenge, but it's easier than that. In that, good leadership, which is the manager's way of getting things done, is to get the recommendations, get the ideas from the staff, and then after we get those ideas, give them the resources for those ideas that are already done. And once we have a subordinate that brings to us an idea, a course of action, and then brings us how he's going to get it done, once the boss, once the manager says, Mr. Junior Staffer, that is a terrific idea. I can see that you lined up the plan of how you're going to execute it. I can see where you organized it to get the people and the resources in place to get it done. I can see where you've got control measures to oversee this project. Once the senior manager sees that the junior staffer has already done that and then gives the manager the project, that junior leader the project, that staffer will embrace that and get it done faster, better, and cheaper because it was his idea to start with. So the big boss will be the genius that he is and exercising real influence, that is leadership, by getting his staff to get things done that they would be excited to get done, because you're going to be excited about your own idea. You're going to be excited about your project that you put together. You're going to be excited about the work that you got done. And nothing can hold back a person that has already put together his own program. The boss has gave it his blessing and his approval to get it done. Well, of course, the staffer is going to be hyper-motivated to put in place his own program. He's not simply being, you know, doing what he's told to do. He's doing more than that. It's his own idea. And one of the things that we found out during the Second World War, and now all throughout the history of management, is that people do those things well, that the things that they came up with, the ideas that they come up with, and the big boss just acts as a resource to his people and gets them the things that they need to get work done. And that is the magic of leadership.
I'm getting all this in my head, and I'm thinking of winning a war, winning a battle. We have battles in corporate world, in our business. We have competitors. We have friendly competitors, but we still want our market share. Now, from the war point of view, it's like, okay, there's two bridges, and the people are, your subordinates say, let's blow up one bridge, forcing the enemy to come to this other bridge where we are well fortified and we can protect it so that they won't advance. So it's something like that. And then the officer would say, well, research it, find it. What does it take to blow it up? How do we blow it up? What else are we going to impact? Things like that. So all that goes in this completed staff work document sort of a thing?
No, exactly. And I like how you're going at it, because two bridges, say, but the takeaway for our business audience, our business leaders today, is that we can have multiple routes to get to our objective, to what we need to do, to get our numbers. I'm an old sales guy. I you know, every night at 4:30 Eastern time, or 7:30 Eastern time, 4:30 Western time, I would be by the phone to get my numbers. I get daily numbers on what did I sell that day. And so the commander's intent, my boss's intent, was to generate sales to get the numbers. So the staff have multiple ways to get things, can have multiple options to get things done what the boss needs. And our job as junior staffers, when I teach my entry-level clients, is to find out what's on the boss's report card. What does your boss get graded on? So that when, in the great fog of business, you know, every plan becomes obsolete when it hits a customer, that things change and they change fast. But if I know, or when I know what's on my report card, which I should know, and I know what my boss gets graded on, I can act pretty fast to know, here's what my boss gets tested on, here's what he's going to need if I need to recommend a course of action. So I can come up with recommendations that will help me make my numbers, but they'll also help the boss make good, look good on his report card.
Getting that very much. You know, it gave me an idea. You know, let's say you've got a particular type of drink, water or a vitamin water, and you're not far from a stadium that has football, baseball, whatever. And I was just thinking, you know, 100 times, 200 times a year, you've got 10, 15,000 people leaving it. So the subordinate, you know, say, hey, we should advertise down the street, because it saves a lot of money from advertising in the stadium, and it's a fraction of the cost. So the superior administrator would say, okay, put all the information together, and then they can look at it, review it, and say, this is a great idea. They can approve it and put that billboard up or that advertisement up a block away. And you're still as if you're in the stadium, but you don't have to pay, you know, the exorbitant prices that you may be. That would be a way of using that as a strategy to gain market share. You heard that a majority of businesses fail. Don't be a statistic. Get my book free, The Vision Map. Beat the odds for your business success. Get it free at tonydurso.com/vision. And set up your own successful vision map. tonydurso.com/vision. And we're back with Jack Yost, Leadership and Followership with Completed Staff Work.
You see, no, exactly. See, okay. And this is the kind of creative thinking that I think that drives the free enterprise system, that, you know, it drives our economy. It's that kind of thinking, which is to say that the goal of the water company, as you just outlined, is to sell water. And a boss in any other country, maybe in any other culture, might say, buy a billboard inside a stadium because there's people there and they'll buy inside. But somebody that's thinking like an entrepreneur, like you just outlined, would say, oh, well, boss, that's my report card, that's your report card, which is to sell water, but we might be able to sell more water with a lower marketing cost if I put the billboard someplace else. I can still have the same effect. I can still have the same results with a lot fewer dollars spent. The military doctrine actually helps us with this, in that it's the army doctrine of discipline. And in a way, Tony, you just outlined it, which is that discipline has two parts. The first part is the prompt obedience to orders, which is that if I'm told what to do, which is to sell water, that's my job. Good discipline is I'm going to do what I'm told. That's compliance. I have to have compliance in an organization. Absent compliance, I got a mob. I have to have a hierarchy and a chain of command. And that's how organizations get done. You know, absent a hierarchy, you got a mob, and all that mobs do are set dumpsters on fire. You know, mobs don't get things done. So you've outlined the first part, which is that we have to sell water. That's the discipline. That's what I'm told to do. But the second part of discipline is the initiation of appropriate action in the absence of orders. It's the initiation of action where I don't have a precise direction, where I get to exercise some initiative. And what I thought that was so funny in the study of military science when I was in the Army is that the Army is just seen as, or the U.S. military is seen as just a body of people that salute and go and does what they're told. And that's true. But what makes this a success of completed staff work is the initiation of action in the absence of orders, or the exercise of initiative. And that's what you just outlined with, you know, putting the billboard, you know, just outside the stadium. Well, that's exercising some thinking out of the box and exercising some initiative that maybe the boss didn't have time to think of. The staffer thought of it. And that's all the completed staff work is. And good bosses, good managers understand that the perception is that the senior manager was losing control if people come up with good ideas, as you just did, of putting the billboard outside the stadium instead of inside the stadium. It's just that simple, Tony.
I'm very impressed with this. Do you have any case studies or successes of this principle, this piece of management technology being implemented in an organization and the results that it achieved?
Well, one of the things that I've always found fascinating is that Henry Ford has always been criticized as being an autocrat and being highly in control. And he was that was his personality, and in the spirit of the times that he was in. Yet there is a lot of that dictatorial control of top down management of the great man. But one of the things that he did do is bring to us, as we know, interchangeable parts and a movable and a moving assembly line. Well, when cars were first and assembly lines were first done, as you can picture in your mind's eye, they would have the cars on a block, and the workers would move from car to car to car. The workers would move, and they'd bring all their parts with them, and the workers would move. Well, you know, some of his workforce assembling the cars came from the meatpacking industry, and one of the meatpackers said, "Why should the workers move all? You know, why should you have the whole workforce move? Why don't we just move the product? Why don't we just move like we do when we in the slaughterhouses? The cattle are put on hooks, and they are and the carcasses rotate and are dressed and dressed down by the individual workers, the butchers, so that the worker stays still and the carcasses move on an assembly line." Moving to the workers. So Henry Ford, and the great leader that he was, the great manager that he was, took that idea from the slaughterhouses, from one of his butchers, and gave us the moving assembly line where the workers today stay still and the cars move. And this way, the worker can be at a station with his parts, with his tools, and he doesn't have to move, and there's none of that wasted time and motion, and the car can mechanically move. So and that idea came not from Henry Ford, it came from his staff. And what I like about that vignette is that not only did the staffer came up with the idea, but somehow it made it from this guy on an assembly line to Henry Ford, who saw it as a good idea and then instituted it to revolutionize the industry and gave us the Model T and opened up America to the horseless carriage in a way that everybody could afford it because it cut out the costs of making automobiles. So it wasn't just a toy for the idle rich. It was for the common man.
And the rest is history. And Henry Ford is credited with developing and coming up with the assembly line. And it just revolutionized the whole industry.
Exactly.
Brilliant. Jack, I got to ask you, this book, The Memo, that's a real historical document?
It is. That's right. It is. It's it is an actual document. Originally at the Catholic University of America, I was doing some research on it, and I saw on the internet that there was this thing called the Memo of Completed Doctrine, and I thought, well, because it's on the internet, it's got to be true. So I had one of my teaching assistants, the delightful student at the time, Christine Buras, she researched it for us. She actually found the document at the MacArthur Foundation down in Norfolk, Virginia. And she said, no, it's an actual, you know, everything that you see on the internet, it is actually true. It's actually, there is a piece of paper that is a memo dating from the Second World War. So I drove down to Norfolk, Virginia, and I grew up there. So it was a fun trip. And to the MacArthur Foundation Memorial down there, and they found the papers. We pulled it out and worked with the archivists down there, and I was able to physically handle an old yellow piece of paper entitled "Completed Staff Work" and that short document outlined the steps for getting a recommendation for the boss. So I thought I was going to have to get in a space suit with gloves on. they just let me handle this. You know, I guess they trusted this guy from academia. And so I've got pictures of it that I have online. But you're right. It is an actual piece of paper. Now, it's also, when MacArthur had it, it was classified restricted, which is to that its distribution was limited because we didn't want the whole rest of the world to see what our doctrine was. But it was also published in the Army-Navy Journal in 1942, in January 1942. So it's a published document, but it's also put out as a restricted memo, and other countries during the Second World War also adopted it. Australia, the Australian Army, Australian military also used it in South Pacific, and so it is an actual document and called a doctrine of management.
I'm very impressed, and it's a good find that you've brought back into society, because sometimes pieces of information like that, brilliant pieces of information, just disappear unless someone brings it back out and puts it back in society. So very good on you for doing that. I love it.
Yeah, no, thank you. No, because you think that it's an urban legend and it's not really true, and it gives the feeling of undermining the credibility of what completed staff work is, and it's so you're right. It gives a firmer foundation that no, this is how General MacArthur did it, memorialized it in a restricted document, and yes, the Army Navy Journal made it a doctrine in a number of offices, so we can point back to completed staff work, back to the Second World War, and we can use it today. It's a timeless, easy way for a manager to get stuff off of his desk, because action and thinking doesn't belong on the boss's desk. And I hesitate to say this, because managers work, but it doesn't matter how hard the boss works if he's working too hard on the wrong things. So one of the things that completed staff work does, it frees up the boss to simply push things down onto a staff and to encourage them to come up with ideas, recommendations, for them to do the research, so that the boss can say yes or no. And the good staffer will also have lined up the resources so that it's all set to go. From New York City, we know from the great builder, the original Bob the Builder, which is Robert Moses, during the height of the Depression, the Roosevelt administration said, we are going to do public works projects, and we are going to fund large-scale projects, dams and bridges and highways that will put a lot of people to work. So what happened is that the call went out from the Roosevelt administration, and his administrator said, bring us your ideas, bring us some projects that we can fund, because we will put tax dollars to work building public works projects, and we will give people the dignity of working together. So what happened is that people from all over the country, local municipalities, would send their architects to D.C. and say, we want to build this bridge, and we want to build this walkway, we want to build this stadium. And they would say, great. And they would have, the administrators would have to decide between projects to fund, because they couldn't fund everything, but they could fund a lot of projects. So the administrators from across the country came in with good ideas. But Tony, like you mentioned earlier, Robert Moses did something different. When he came in with his Moses men, he called them, they came in with blueprints. They came with building permits. When they came up the white marble steps all over here in the nation's capital, from where I'm talking to you from, Robert Moses already had building permits done, how he had the unions lined up, had manpower needs already assessed with union clearance. He already had the trades, the people lined up. He already had the local elected politicos lined up behind building these giant bridges, because that would require the cooperation of entire neighborhoods. And when he walked up and said, I need $10 million to build this bridge, all you have to do is write a check, and it is ready to go. Tomorrow I can start putting it was the first shovel-ready projects. These were shovel-ready. And the administrator said, this is a good idea. He's already set to go. He got money before anybody else did. And everybody criticized, you know, Robert Moses for being a human bulldozer, but he got things done through completed staff work, where projects were completed, where all the boss had to do was approve. And then he would leave Washington, D.C. with very large checks and could rebuild New York City. He won the awards. And he exercised that concept of completed staff work.
Absolutely brilliant. All right, Revenue Crew, look into completed staff work and check this out. Make your job easier for yourself, for any of your superiors, and for any of your employees under you. Completed staff work. Once again, Jack Yost, We talked about leadership and followership with completed staff work. His website is yoest.com, Y-O-E-S-T. Jack, thank you so much. I love talking about management and marketing. We're going to have to do this again. I feel we've got tons more to talk about and tons more to give in terms of information, insights, and advice to our Revenue Crew audience. I want to thank you so much.
Thank you, Tony. It was a delight.
It was great. All right. And thank you, everyone. And stay tuned to our next show on Revenue Chat. Stick around in just another moment. I'm going to tell you about something I really love. If you like this interview, would you kindly give me a review on iTunes? It's the purple icon on your Apple device. A sentence or two is just fine. Thanks in advance. Our next episode is with Bob McGannon, Winning with Intelligent Disobedience. You heard that a majority of businesses fail. Don't be a statistic. Get my book free, The Vision Map. Beat the odds for your business success. Get it free at tonydurso.com/vision. And set up your own successful vision map. tonydurso.com/vision. Here's a story about something I really love. As mentioned in the earlier episode, 167, Ronan finally found a friend to be his companion, in a way, while he healed from his torn ACL injuries. We believe the ginger cat was sent by God to help Ronan in his time of recovery. He loved going out and searching for her and then play the staring standoff game. The cat would hang out for a long time and then eventually wander off from boredom or get startled by vehicles, people, or other dogs. By the way, as the cat was wild and hung out in the neighborhood, well, in the evenings, I would go to her favorite hangout spot and I'd drop off some fresh milk and food. It was the least I could do. Now, after weeks and weeks, or maybe a few short months, I'm not really sure, the cat was no longer there. We would take Ronan out and he would wait and wait and wait, and she never came. Then, one of the neighbors, who also fed her, announced that poor Ginger was hit by a car and killed. It was sad news. Ronan could not understand what happened, and we told him she's gone and not coming back. He refused to accept our explanation and wanted to go search for her himself. This made him want to walk more so he could trace all the places where she used to hang out and look for himself. Ronan began to walk a little more and a little more as he would walk to Ginger's hangout spots and sniff them out. Days went by and no more Ginger. He eventually figured it out that she was gone forever. Now, Ronan began to long for the Angels Stadium once again. He would try to walk as much as possible to show us he's strong enough to make it there. However, we knew better. Go to my Facebook album page at Tony S. D-U-R-S-O, remember that S, and look for the album of What I Love. You'll see pictures of Ronan at the Angel Stadium and the feral ginger cat. And stay tuned for next week's Ronan Adventure and his return to the Angel Stadium. All right, thanks again, everyone. And until next time, remember, you can make life better for yourself and everyone. Choose wisely. Tony D'Urso wrote and produced the intro and extra music on this show. All rights reserved.